This Israel report is brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you are based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.
The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, Boker Tov, good morning. How are you?
Boker Tov, day 600. 600 days. And still 58 hostages in Gaza. The war still continues. In those first few days when we spoke, and I was quite bewildered with the events that had overtaken us, and trying to get my head around to understand what was going on and how things had happened, and what this meant for all of us. I never envisaged in my wildest dreams that on day 600 we would still be talking about this. But unfortunately, that's the reality. Of course, day 600 coincides with Rosh Chodesh, Chodesh Tov, and it also coincides with the start of the Muslim month of Dhul Hijjah, which is the month during which the Hajj takes place to the holy site of Mecca. And of course, the Saudi authorities are very much readying themselves for the onslaught of the Hajjis, the people who will make the Hajj during the course of this month and the next few weeks. And of course, we are looking forward to Chag Shavuot, the festival of Shavuot, which will also take place. And I have little doubt that the atmosphere is already evident where you are, Howard, and certainly I feel it. People are readying themselves for the Chag, but still we are just bewildered by the fact that we are on day 600 and we just don't seem to have a real way out of this situation, that we can just recover all of our hostages dead and alive and somehow move on to get past this. We are stuck in the cycle until we can retrieve all of those who belong back home. And until then, unfortunately, we just can't move on. And, you know, I feel that we are mentally stuck until that time. You know, that's just my feeling. Howard, I also wanted to just address the story. I know that you've also made some comments on it on your social media about the family in Gaza who claimed that 9 of their 10 children were killed in this attack.
I'm finding it impossible
to try and work out what part of the story, if any, is true.
Well, the IDF have said simply that they're investigating the allegations. So there hasn't been a formal denial of the events, and I'm not really quite sure how one goes about investigating whether it's true or not. There were people killed, whether they were all children, you know, what happened. But there is a certain fact which is worth mentioning to the listeners, and the fact is that the IDF issued evacuation instructions for that particular area, not once, but twice before those attacks took place. So while we don't condone loss of civilian life, and we certainly don't rejoice at the loss of civilian life, and if indeed that was the case, then there is a lot to be sad about, because that is not the intention of any of the activities that are taking place during the course of this war. And that is the reason why the IDF has an Arabic spokesman who's become quite a celebrity in the Arab world. And that is the reason why they send particular evacuation instructions to very, very local areas to say, your house, your area, leaflets, SMS messages, text messages, phone calls, whatever it takes in order to warn people. And it seems as if those messages do get through because substantial numbers of people do move away from the area. So the question is, if evacuation instructions were issued to that area where that family seemingly was killed, according to the allegations, why were they still there? Now, we can all be very brave and say, look, we're not afraid of the IDF and we won't be moved from our homes and we're going to stay here come what may. And of course, that is a certain stance that people may wish to take, you know, justified or unjustified, but that's a position. But then you need to expect whatever comes next. And when the IDF says evacuate, they really mean it because as a general rule, once they've issued evacuation instructions, the areas which have been evacuated are going to be attacked. So again, you know, we definitely issue condolences for all of the civilians who have been killed during the course of this war. We've tried to do whatever we can to avoid civilian casualties, and the numbers bear our actions out. In other words, on an objective scale of the number of civilian casualties that might be expected in a war of the type that we've been waging up until now, the numbers are extremely low by all international standards. It doesn't, however, mean that we set out to kill civilians, but the fact is that the preventative action that the IDF has taken to try to avoid civilian casualties is evident. And ultimately, the responsibility for each civilian death lies with Hamas. They are the ones who decided to attack Israel. They are the ones who decided to embed their military operations inside civilian areas. They are the ones who decided to dig tunnels under hospitals and run military operations from hospitals and from schools and from other civilian areas. And therefore, the right blame needed to be laid with Hamas and not blame Israel or the IDF, who are really doing all that they can to avoid that. So, you know, I don't know whether the story is true or not, but I think that we just need to put it into the right context.
And the problem is that Hamas actually benefits from the death of civilians and the death of babies, which just makes it so much, much more difficult to navigate. And that's kind of what you're referring to earlier, why it seems to just be the same situation, because success looks differently to Hamas as it does to Israel. Let's talk about the new food distribution system in Gaza. Apparently, they delivered something like 400,000 food rations. Tell us about what's happening here.
Well, I think that what happened yesterday, which is really the first full day of this food distribution program, had a number of interesting and tremendous stories associated with it. The first of which is, of course, the number of food rations that were distributed yesterday. We understand that something like 8,000 aid packages were distributed, which equates to 462,000 food rations. So that's almost 500,000 people who were given one meal from the aid distribution centers yesterday. We know that Hamas threatened the population not to take up on this. They were hoping that this would be an abject failure by virtue of the fact that nobody would turn up to pick up food rations. And in fact, exactly the opposite happened. The food distribution centers were inundated with people to the point that distribution had to be halted at one of the centers because the crowd literally broke in to the distribution center, which caused damage to the fences around the area, and a certain number of packages were stolen. However, there was success in bringing the situation under control quite quickly, and the food distribution continued. And the number of people who came to pick up their food packages is the way in which we measure Hamas's failure rather than the success in this particular aspect, because they were hoping nobody would turn up. Now, the other thing that's really fascinating about this distribution center is that an armed Gazan force of people is protecting these food distribution centers. People from Gaza who are armed and who have officially been given the role of of protecting these centers. They are not related to Hamas, and they are not affiliated with the Palestinian Authority, and yet they are local people who are doing the protection. So I think that this potentially gives rise to an independent Gazan force of some sort, which is being fully supported by Israel and the Americans and those involved in the distribution. But we found somehow some independent force that we can use to at least protect these centers. And that could potentially escalate further to be a much bigger factor in the day after scenario, when we want neither Hamas to be involved and the Palestinian Authority say they would like to, but perhaps can't. So potentially this is a solution. Another interesting aspect is that it was made known yesterday that the funding for the food that's being distributed largely comes from the Israeli taxpayer. So I and others like me are paying for that food to be distributed to Gazans in Gaza. Of course, that fact will not be made known publicly. And the question is, where is the international community who are standing up and screaming from the rooftops at how evil Israel not to allow the food to be distributed? Well, apparently, Israel is actually financing much of the food that is being distributed in Gaza right now. So I think that there are some very, very interesting aspects to what's going on right now. Yesterday was certainly a massive success. And of course, it will come as no surprise to anybody to hear that the UN and other aid organizations issued complaints and criticisms of the food distribution that went down yesterday, for reasons which really are not clear to me why they would complain about food being distributed to people in Gaza is just beyond my level of understanding. But maybe that's what we should expect, right? Maybe it shouldn't be a surprise to any of us. But the most important thing, of course, is that this weakens Hamas's control and power in Gaza. And that is a very, very welcome thing, along with people being fed who need to be fed. So I think that all in all, yesterday was a really, really interesting day to see how all of this has unfolded.
I saw people saying yesterday that that yesterday in of itself was a very, very significant turning point, one of the more important days of the war because of the shift. Would you agree with that?
100%. I mean, that's why I've taken some time to go through so many facts and to go through so many different aspects of what happened yesterday. There is no doubt that it presents a turning point, a certain marker in the way in which this war has been developed. And it shows that Hamas is significantly weakened. I don't know if it's been weakened to the point that we could say it's on the verge of being destroyed, but it's certainly been significantly weakened. And it is just another aspect in the development of the war. As I say, we're still stuck because our hostages are not being released. And that's really the overriding factor that we all feel right now. But the events of yesterday are undoubtedly a turning point.
President Trump has asked Prime Minister Netanyahu not to take any actions that may disrupt the U.S. negotiations with Iran. What has been Netanyahu's reaction to this?
Well, we understand that there was a phone call that took place last week in which President Trump specifically asked Prime Minister Netanyahu to not take any measures that could potentially hinder the ongoing diplomatic efforts that the US is carrying out with Iran. And we understand that this conversation didn't go down so well, that apparently Netanyahu was not too enthusiastic about towing the line on this particular one, even though ultimately, I suppose, there is little doubt that Israel will cooperate with whatever Trump has requested. I mean, I don't think it's a free ticket, but pretty much almost anything that Trump has requested. And the reason that Netanyahu seems to have been so agitated, I think, comes from two or three different places. First of all, that Israel continues to be attacked by the Houthis, which is an indirect attack from Iran. Mm-hmm. And at some point, we're going to have to say enough is enough, and we're going to have to take action against that. So that seems at least now to be off the table while the Americans continue the negotiations. The second point is that the Americans who did dip into Yemen and try to perhaps cause some damage to the Houthis seem to have really not achieved a great deal. So Israel is on its own, really, where this is concerned. I mean, when we think about a potential attack against an Iranian nuclear facility, and when we see what success or lack of success the Americans had in Yemen, you sort of wonder how helpful they will be if and when we need to carry out this attack against Iran. I'm sort of being a little facetious, because clearly American help will always somehow be there and will be helpful. There's no doubt about that. But the Yemen escapade is a little kind of concerning. And I think the third thing that's concerning the Prime Minister right now is that the potential window for attacking Iran seems to be closing quite dramatically, both in terms of Iran's strength, its ability to defend against an attack, which seems to have been really weakened, let's say, 2, 3, 4 months ago. But I'm guessing now they've managed to rearm themselves somehow and recreate some of those anti-air defense missiles that were in place and were damaged. So I think that the window of opportunity seems to be closing down. And I think, of course, the final thing is that the Prime Minister is really nervous about the fact that Trump may well actually come to an agreement with Iran, and that this, you know, request for cooperation will be open-ended. In other words, that Israel will be prevented from taking any meaningful action against Iran for an extended period of time as a result of any agreement that the US comes to with Iran. So I think there are a few reasons to be concerned. It's interesting that the U.S. Secretary, Homeland Secretary Kristi Noem, has been in Israel and met with Prime Minister Netanyahu and also talked to him about this. But apparently that was quite a fraught conversation that took place over the telephone. Ultimately, Israel will be towing the line, and I expect that that will be the case at least for the foreseeable future.
Anthony Reich, thank you. As always, that is where we leave it. It is 8 o'clock. I'm Howard Feldman. You can catch the Israel Report tomorrow morning at 7:45.
That Israel Report was brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you're based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.